Jambase is pleased to present Clusterflies, a covers compilation reimagining Phish's album Farmhouse, bonus songs, and revamped tracklist. The limited edition 3LP release was mastered by engineer Joe Lampert and includes custom artwork and a poster created by longtime Phish collaborator Jim Pollock. A pre-order is underway now through May 3rd at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Visit www.clusterflies.com for purchasing information as well as full album credits and tracklist details. Among the artists who recorded Phish covers for Clusterflies were Umphreys McGee's, Brendan Bayless, Club Delph, Daniel Donato, Sylvan Esso, Chris Forsyth, Neil Francis, Jennifer Hartswick, Amy Helm, Lindsay Liu, Reed Mathis, White Denims, James Petrolli, Strand of Oaks, Sadler Vaden, Vetiver, William Tyler, Riley Walker, and a supergroup led by Tim Palmieri. Each of the songs on Clusterflies will be featured via daily episodes of the Jambase podcast, with interviews with the musicians that recorded the cover. This episode features Heavy Things, which was covered for Clusterflies by Sadler Vaden.
And then people will probably recognize this one, which I do all the time. And then you can hit DigiCraft and it all goes away because all that stuff is over there.
And if you push the button again now,
it's still there. Or this is even better. You can stop it and it's still in the thing. And if you want to hear it once, Brian built this custom pedal for me that goes over here called Once. And I hit it, and the loop goes once with my left foot. And he specifically built it so I could do this. I went. See, then I have to keep it. It only goes with my foot now. So I go. It was actually specifically built for that song. For Heavy Things. But now that I have it, I do that all night long.
What you just heard was an excerpt of Phish guitarist Trey Anastasio's Rig Rundown video, recorded in the summer of 2012. That sound Trey just demonstrated is the signature component of Heavy Things, an easily identifiable loop that anchors the song selected as Farmhouse's lead single. Trey previously discussed the way he generates the Heavy Things loop in an August 2000 interview with Guitar Player magazine, explaining with some detail for you guitarists out there listening that, quote, "In Heavy Things, that doot doot is a harmonic that I palm mute and play into the boomerang. I just tap my foot to the song's beat to trigger the harmonic while I'm playing my other parts against it. The loop is coming through my amp with the guitar notes. I tried overdubbing the harmonic at one point, and it sounded falsified in some way. Whereas when I do it live, it just melds right in with the band. I use another loop in the outro guitar solo for Heavy Things. After the hand claps come in, there's a moment where you hear two versions of the same note talking to each other. My solo goes up to the same note that I recorded in the boomerang. So I'm tapping out one note with my foot on the boomerang while picking the same note on guitar. This gives me two different rhythms. You could probably do this manually on the guitar, but it wouldn't sound the same." End quote. Well, that sounds easy enough, right? In May 2000, around the release of Farmhouse, Phish made several promotional radio appearances, often playing the single during live studio sessions. The single, Heavy Things, became one of Phish's most commercially successful releases, hitting number 2 on Billboard's Adult Alternative chart in June 2000. Further mainstream success was evidenced by Heavy Things reaching number 40 on Billboard's Adult Top 40 chart that same summer. A radio edit of Heavy Things was released to radio stations, and here's the call-out hook that was delivered to DJs to play on air.
Things are falling down on me, heavy things I could not see. When I finally came around, something small would pin me down.
Trey first introduced Heavy Things during the Electric Trio portions of his May 1999 tour, which was his first such solo endeavor and featured nightly solo acoustic opening sets. That tour produced a number of songs that landed on Farmhouse, though Heavy Things' history predates that tour. Anastasio's frequent songwriting partner Tom Marshall co-wrote Heavy Things during a writing session that also produced Driver, Window or Bug, Name, Never, Brian and Robert, and Samantin. The session was the last in a series of 4 weekend songwriting retreats the pair held at rented farmhouses in Vermont in 1997. There's a third person credited with co-writing Heavy Things, Scott Herman, who has also written parts of at least 18 Phish songs. Some of Herman's contributions to the Phish songbook include portions of Limb by Limb, Vultures, Dirt, Cavern, The Squirming Coil, and Meatstick. Longtime employee of the Phish organization, Beth Montori, wrote the liner notes to the Trampled by Lambs and Pecked by the Dove collection of Anastasio Marshall demos that served as the source of Phish's 1997 album The Story of the Ghost and its follow-up Farmhouse. Regarding the third credited lyricist, Montori wrote, quote, "Credit should also be given to Scott Herman, whose lyrics have been used in previous Phish songs and whose poems can be found in bits and pieces throughout these works," end quote. While Herman contributed to the version of Heavy Things recorded by Trey and Tom and later by Phish on Farmhouse, a slightly different version performed by Marshall's band Amphibian debuted in January 1999. Amphibian's arrangement included different lyrics at the beginning of the song, a big jam section in the middle, and an ending section with additional singing. According to Phish.net, Amphibian bassist Matt Cohut helped write the alternate words, described as dark and introspective. Here's what the Amphibian arrangement sounded like from their concert on February 3rd, 1999, just a few weeks after they played it live for the first time.
Thank you.
The first time Trey played Heavy Things in public was on May 4th, 1999, on the second night of his solo tour. That version introduced the lyrics that would become standard when played by Trey. Around the time of Farmhouse's release, Trey and Phish bassist Mike Gordon were interviewed by MTV. Trey explained that part of the Heavy Things lyrics were biographical, about Phish drummer John Fishman, and specifically a relationship he had with a woman named Vanessa.
The first verse about Vanessa calling, that one is about this friend of Phish's, this girlfriend of his. Phish has a really bad habit of, when he was in his heavy dating period, he would set up these dates with this particular person, and she would get all dressed up and ready for him to come, and inevitably he would end up smoking a joint or something and starting to play his drums. And so it wasn't really about her, but it ended up being about her sort of in my mind. It was finally they had this big date. They were going to go on a boat together, and I was living with him at the time. And so she calls on the phone. You know, he's a couple hours late. This is a bad story. It's going nowhere. But anyway, that's what it is. We got it. Let me tell some other story.
He was practicing the hi-hat. She was all dressed up waiting on the boat.
That is what happened.
And then he said, I'll be there. Okay, I'll be there in half an hour. And then another 2 hours went by and he was still practicing the hi-hat.
She called back. And then she came over to the house. Steamed. And I remember he said, can this wait? I've really got something good figured out. So that's what the song's about. It's all about. All songs are about Fishman.
Another woman mentioned in the Heavy Things lyrics, named Mary, is an actual person as well. She attended a Trey Anastasio band concert in January 2013 at the Capitol Theater in Port Chester, New York, and was recognized by her one-time friend from stage, who also provided an update on Vanessa.
Where is she? You guys, the actual Mary from that song is in the room tonight. Mary was a friend, I'd say.
She's in front of you.
Put your hand on Mary. There she is right there. That's the actual Mary from the song. Hi, Mary. She was a friend until one summer day. She borrowed everything I owned and simply ran away. And I never saw her again until right now. She's back. Vanessa is not here tonight. She has, I think she's in England somewhere. She just got remarried. They're all real people. As are we. We are all real people.
Heavy Things was first played by Phish when, after not being played during the band's summer 1999 tour, it made its live Phish debut on September 11th, 1999 at the Gorge in Washington State. At year's end, Heavy Things would take on a prominent role during the band's historic Midnight to Sunrise set that ushered in the new millennium. On December 31st, 1999, as part of a festival held in Florida at Big Cypress Seminole Indian Reservation, Phish played from Midnight to Sunrise as the year 2000 became reality. 80-some thousand people attended the festival, with millions more getting a glimpse of the festivities when ABC went live from Big Cypress during their Y2K New Year's Eve coverage. Trey paused the marathon set to address the audience prior to going live on ABC, and in line with the band's penchant for pulling pranks, gave instructions to yell cheesecake at its conclusion.
Okay, Mike and I were just talking. We have 2 minutes till this thing starts. Then actually it would be kind of funny if, like, we'll play a song, right? We'll play a short song so that there's time for you guys to react at the end. But it's something that we wanted to do on our live album that we never got around to. We're thinking it'd be weird if instead of clapping and cheering, you know, everybody did some odd thing like scream cheesecake or something. Everybody, you know, instead of clapping at the end of the song, you know, just say cheesecake once or something like that. That's what we'll do. We'll do just, we'll stop it and then everybody just go, cheesecake! And then just be silent after that, you know? Like no extraneous clapping or anything. And you don't have to smile either, you know? Just like straight, dead straight face. Just cheesecake! So we'll play a song with we have 1 minute. We'll play a song with a tight end. As soon as we end, cheesecake. Say it like you're pissed.
ABC's Peter Jennings introduced The Fish, giving the uninitiated viewing audience around the world a brief background on the band and the event at Big Cypress. The anchor then went live from the Florida Everglades, though after Trey made a short unaired speech, and millions around the world watched Fish play Heavy Things. ABC cut away right at the end of the song, just as the crowd responded with shouts of cheesecake. The cheesecake gag became part of Fish lore, the word itself taking on a secret meaning among the band's fans.
We're going to go now to the Big Cypress Seminole Indian Reservation in Florida. There was the biggest traffic jam that we know of in the country was caused on what's sometimes called Alligator Alley, which is South Florida's east to west highway. And it was jammed today with fans of the Fish going to the Big Seminole Indian Reservation to hear a Fish concert. If you don't know Fish, think Grateful Dead, at least in terms of their dedicated followers. And 75,000 people, it must have been the earliest sold-out concert of anywhere on this Millennium Eve celebration. And they sang for us out on that reservation and as well for their devotedly fervent fans.
Hi, everybody out in TV land. We are live from the Big Cypress Seminole Indian Reservation. Thank you for joining our party tonight. And I just, before we put this on, I want to send a message of peace and love in the 21st century, a simple message that will keep everyone happy. Please remember, the right lane is for traveling and the left lane is for passing. Stay out of the left lane unless you're passing, and let's have some peace and harmony in the 21st century. Thank you.
Considered one of Fish's most accessible songs, as shown before by its relative radio success, Heavy Things has stayed largely true to form when played by Fish or Tab. In 2011, Trey performed a few versions of Heavy Things while playing acoustic guitar and backed by the rest of the Trey Anastasio band, just as he was doing at the time on songs like Liquid Time and on covers of Outkast's Hey Ya. The acoustic Heavy Things arrangement was also notable because, since he wasn't playing one of his custom Paul Languedoc electric guitars, Trey dropped the song's usual doot-doot loop.
Falling down on me, heavy things I could not see. When I finally came around, something small would pin me down. When I tried to step aside, I moved to where they'd hoped I'd
be. The Trey Anastasio Band headlined the 2013 edition of Delfest in Maryland, which is hosted by the Del McCurry Band. That night saw Del McCurry, Ronnie McCurry, Rob McCurry, and Jason Carter sit in with Trey and the band on the bluegrass favorites I'm Blue and I'm Lonesome by Bill Monroe and Del's own Beauty of My Dreams, both of which have been performed a number of times by Fish. Trey brought Ronnie, Rob, and Jason back for the encore that night, respectively adding mandolin, banjo, and fiddle to Heavy Things, as well as Led Zeppelin's Black Dog.
I'd be.
Heavy Things continues to be a staple of Phish set lists that was played just once in 2019. It also remains a constant in the Transtasio band set list. Tab played Heavy Things on October 30th, 2020, on the fourth night of Trey's The Beacon Jam's weekly residency at the Beacon Theater in New York, held over 8 weeks last October and November. For Clusterflies, singer-songwriter Sadler Vaden, who's also a member of Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, recorded an excellent cover of Heavy Things. I talked to the guitarist recently about Phish, recording his version of Heavy Things, and more. Here's my chat with Sadler. So Sadler, can you tell me, do you remember the first time you heard Phish?
Yes, I do. And I love that question. The first time I heard Phish, my folks had just moved us from North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, to the Charleston, South Carolina area. And there was a radio station in Charleston called 96 Wave. And it was just a really great radio station. They played, you know, Cracker, the Black Crowes, all Sunvolt, just all the like good stuff that was nurturing for you. And they played Phish, of course. And I think the first thing I heard was, it might have been Bouncing Around the Room. I think it was Bouncing Around the Room. And
sounds right.
My dad and I, because this was like 1999, my dad and I immediately went to the mall, to the CD store, the music store. And because my dad was like, who is this? Oh, Phish. He's like, I've heard of them. I've seen the t-shirt. You know, at that time in the 90s, I think my dad was starting to put together, like, I remember him saying, Tool, like, that's a band. Everybody, you see the shirt, you know, same with Phish. You know, you saw the Phish with the word in it and all that. That was like a really popular shirt. Yeah, the logo. Yeah, the actual logo. And, he was like, oh, this is band. He's like, wow, they're great. You know, the guitar player is so great and all that stuff. So we immediately ran out and bought a live one.
Okay.
And then from there, it was just, you know, I started getting more and more into them all the while listening to Blink 182 and whatever else was popular at the time. Cause I was, you know, I was a kid, I was like 12 or 13 years old. So, but that was the first time I heard Phish. And then I think the second record we got was, Hoist and then Billy Breathes. And then from there, you know, you start going, you know, Picture of Nectar and then Rift and, you know, you start getting into the deeper stuff.
So do you consider that like starting a fandom? I mean, if you're collecting the rest of the records, you've been listening to them ever since, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was obsessed with Phish and the Beatles at the same time when I was in high school. So when I started writing songs, they had this weird mix of like British rock or whatever, you know, like the Beatles thing. And then like this the jammy thing.
Yeah.
too. Which was cool looking back. I'm like, that's kind of a cool thing. But yeah, you know, I learned so much from listening to Phish and becoming a fan, just about improvising and, you know, and then my dad had turned me on to Frank Zappa and the Grateful Dead and all that kind of stuff. But I would say Phish was sort of accessible for me to get into Zappa and, you know, these other groups, you know, jam groups and more avant-garde experimental rock groups and stuff.
So were you playing guitar at the time when around this time? Had you started playing guitar yourself?
Yeah, I'd already been playing for a few years. So I was really into hearing guitar.
So were you, did you rely on Trey as an influence then? Were you trying to mimic his licks and stuff?
For sure, especially in high school. I remember going to a music shop and I found a Dan Electro compressor called the Surf and Turf.
Okay.
And I didn't know that the sound, I didn't know that I was looking for the specific sound. I just bought this pedal because it was like used, $30 or something. I got it. Mm-hmm. And I remember plugging it up and I was like, this sounds like Trey. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, exactly. Wow, he must use a compressor, you know? But I mean,
yep.
This was before, like, it was just all this gear craziness on the internet everywhere. You could find out who played anything, you know, they'd have to be in a guitar magazine talking about it and stuff. There were still secrets, you know? So I was young and I didn't have anyone around me that was like older that played guitar and listened to Phish that could tell me, oh, he uses the Boomerang and he uses the Ross and all the, you know, gear stuff. So, but yeah, definitely, would mimic, you know, Trey and learn a lot of his licks. And I think it really opened my mind up to get out of like the blues stuff and just like the rock and roll, you know, Clapton, Hendrix, all the stuff that you learn when you pick a guitar up. So when I was learning the Phish stuff, it really opened my mind up to different chord inversions and, you know, different, you know, what it, to explore the neck of the guitar more. So definitely.
And you mentioned, you know, it influenced your improvisation. Do you also listen to a lot of their live music beyond the albums?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I love the Hampton Comes Alive stuff. You know, and then when they were doing the Phish live series, like on CDs, yeah, I used to get a bunch of those. Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed their live stuff. I can't say that I enjoy their records more than live or live more than records, but definitely I was becoming a fan and searching out, you know, these shows and looking up set lists on Nugs and fish.net and all that stuff. So yeah. The first time I saw them was, it's funny. I've only seen Phish once, which is really wild. I've seen Trey. Cause when I became a fan and really started getting into them, they took a hiatus, but I saw them on the Round Room tour. I think it was like 2003 or something. Okay. Yep. And it was in Greensboro. Right. Yeah. It was in Greensboro. And my God, they opened up with Chalk Dust Torture and woo, buddy. It was an amazing show. And I've bought the, concert last year on Live Phish just to you know take a trip back.
So you said you just seen him once, but you've seen Trey before?
I saw Trey at the first Bonnaroo.
Oh, okay. I was there too. Nice.
That was really killer. And everybody thought Phish was gonna come out. Yeah, he started playing bathtub gin. Rumor was, you know, back in the field, it was like, I think Phish, Gordon, they're going to come out, you know, they never did. No.
And so tell me about your relationship with the album Farmhouse. Do you remember when you first heard that record?
Yeah. I remember going and buying it. And I mean, my God, I mean, just what an album. I mean, I immediately fell in love with it, and I'd already been a fan for a little bit. So I remember hearing it, and even at a young age, hearing it and being like, they're taking the next step. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, you know what I mean? This is going to be big. And sure enough, I mean, it was, you know, and then started hearing them on the radio more. And and I think it's one of the best records ever. I mean, I really just, it might be their best studio album, you know, that could be argued. But I think it was really like a digestible album for folks that weren't Phish fans, you know?
Yes.
And the title track Farmhouse, it's an amazing song. It's like their bell bottom blues or something like that. You know, it's like that song for them.
Yeah. But there's a timelessness about it for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. It just has that. It's just a great song, you know? And I feel like the lyrics were, you know, heartfelt and stuff like that. And I liked hearing that.
So let's talk about the song that you recorded for Clusterflies, Heavy Things. What drew you to that for the project?
Well, what's really odd is that last May of 2020, my wife and I and my sister-in-law wanted to get out of Nashville, and everywhere was sort of locked down or whatever, but we were like, we've got to get like to a beach somehow or something. Like, we've got to get some sunshine and get out of Nashville. And so the only place that was sort of like open, of course, was Myrtle Beach. So, and this is, you know, before full on summertime, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I just want to preface with that. It was really like, we were able to get a spot. We went and we found a spot near where I grew up. And we were riding back to South Carolina, and I got my CD booklet out, and on the first page was Farmhouse in there. And I was like, we're listening to Farmhouse.
Oh, yeah, nice.
I haven't listened to this for so long. So we put it in, and my wife and I just immediately were like, this is, man, this, what a great album. This is awesome, you know? And Candace, my wife's like, I used to love this song in high school, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And so we get the Heavy Things, and I'd kind of forgotten about Heavy Things. And I must have listened to Heavy Things like a week straight on that trip. And so all these months later, when I got asked to do Clusterflies, I was like, this is just so odd to me that I'm getting asked to be on this album because I just sort of pulled Farmhouse, you know, and blew the dust off of it and really fell in love with that record again. So it was serendipitous, but
that's very cool.
That's why I chose Heavy Things, because I fell back in love with that song. And also it's sort of a pop rock song. Mm-hmm. For Phish, in my mind, it's
sure.
very like radio friendly. And I just like, I like songs like that. I like stuff that has that little poppy edge to it.
It was the single for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I like singles. I just do. I mean, that's what, you know, I like deep cuts too, but I'm just not that guy that's like, oh, I'm going to pick the one that wasn't poppy. I don't know. I'm going to pick the one I like. And, you know, not that I don't like Farmhouse and all those other great songs in there, Got a Jaboo and all that stuff. And Back on the Train. It was really a toss up between Back on the Train, because my sister and I used to listen to that ride in the high school in the morning. That was like our get up and go.
Oh, that's cool.
Going to school song. So, but I thought Heavy Things for my voice and just mm-hmm. I had the arrangement and the way I wanted to do it immediately in my head.
So let's talk about that arrangement. And the actual recording of it. How did you recruit the other guys? And tell me about who the other guys are that play on the track.
Yeah, so I recruited a few great musicians. The bass player is Jimbo Hart, who plays with me in Jason Isbell's 400 Unit.
Yes.
The drummer is a great drummer named Eric Slick, and he's Dr. Mm-hmm. Dog's drummer. Mm-hmm. And the keyboard player is a guy named Billy Justineau. And Billy was in Brothers Osborne, which is a country band, and now he plays mm-hmm. for Eric Church.
Oh, okay.
But he's a killer player. I played with him on this Lynyrd Skynyrd tribute night, and ever since I played with him, because he was just nailing the stuff, the Skynyrd stuff, and that's not easy to play.
No, no doubt.
And I was like, wow, this guy's great. And so I knew I wanted somebody. You know, I wanted a killer in there. It was my first time playing with Eric Slick. I had seen him play with Dr. Dog. We met at a festival. It was like the last show we all played before everything got shut down. Mm-hmm. And he had just put out a record, and I don't know. I was just like, hey man, are you, you know, would you be down to do this Phish song with me? Because he's a big Zappa guy, yeah, it just worked out. So those were the players I used.
Eric's actually on another track on Clusterflies.
That's what I've heard.
Well.
Yeah.
So he got recruited for two different songs.
I didn't know
songs.
You were that big of a fan, Eric.
Yeah, right. And you recorded it during COVID. So were you guys able to be in the same room together?
Yeah, we were spaced out, of course, and mm-hmm. we tracked everything live. We just wore our mask and kept our mm-hmm. distance and all that. And I think, you know, we just felt good about it. Everybody had pretty much been kind of locked down in their house. And, we were safe and, we're able to do it all in the same room.
Awesome. And you did that at Battle Tapes, right? In Nashville?
Yes, Battle Tapes is a studio owned by this great engineer producer named Jeremy Ferguson, who works with Cage the Elephant and a lot of great other bands. And so I picked him because I wanted the track to have like a little bit of sort of his sound on it. It's like kind of got this cool crunch to it, and mm-hmm. in a kind of indie way. And I think it came out great.
I think it turned out terrific. I really like the the little twanginess that you put in there, and the it's got a great punch to it. It has the motor of the song is just propelling. It's great.
Yeah, and you know, it actually, when we got in there and we started playing it, we all kind of looked at each other and was like, it took us a minute to get to where we ended up. And I'm not sure if you were going to ask about that, but I'll just go ahead and say that it took a minute. We were playing it and we all kind of looked at each other like, I don't know. I feel like we're just playing the song and we're not doing anything with the song. Like we're just kind of, we're playing it and it's feeling sort of like just heavy things, you know? And
yeah.
To me, I didn't see the purpose of doing it that way. I'm like, why would we just do it like exactly like Fish does it? I mean, we're not, you know, in my mind, we're not going to beat their version. So let's put something on there. And then we stumbled on this Zeppelin kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I said, let's Zeppelin this thing when it gets to that, you know, when it gets basically the B section, which is like a chorus.
Right.
Stumbling as I fall from grace. You know what I mean? So that when we stumbled upon that, we were like, okay, now we're going somewhere. And then I said, we got to put a synth pad on this, like in through the outdoor Zeppelin era. Like, and so once we got that rhythmic chug going, that led us to where we ended up. And I said, okay, at the end, it's got to be like three different, like Jimmy Page would do these solos, it'd be like three different people.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
That's where I ended up at the end with like the outro solo and stuff.
What guitar were you playing on that?
So I was playing my Les Paul, which I had wired like Page's number one. So that's how I could get, you know, it sounds like a Telecaster at the end, you know, it sounds like this Nashville Tele thing, but it's actually Les Paul. I just, for anybody who's into guitar gear and stuff, that basically there's a the pickup in the guitar is able to get thrown out of phase, and it makes a Gibson sound like a Telecaster.
Interesting. That's cool. Yeah, it sounds great.
Thank you.
The other guys in the band, were they, or not necessarily, sorry, not the band, but in the recording session, were they familiar with the song ahead of time?
Yeah, everyone was, because it was on the radio.
Okay, all right,
yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. So they were all like, yeah, I remember when this was on the radio. This was like their kind of like, it was like a hit kind of.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely.
For Fish, and in Fish terms, it was kind of a hit, you know?
For sure. So we can wrap up. I have one quick question though. It's kind of random, but a few years ago, you were with the 400 unit playing at the Ryman, and Jason Isbell mentioned that he has a friend who's a Fish fan, and he talked about, they taught him about bust outs. That wasn't you, was it?
No. So that was his friend. I'm honestly like, I didn't even know about bust outs and the hose or whatever, you know?
Yep.
But it all made sense to me once I knew that. But no, that was his friend Will Welch, who is the
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know who Will is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny. All right. Well, I just had to
take a shot
there. I
believe
that's
who he was talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
No, but that, I mean, that's what's so great too about the culture of Fish, you know, and the fandom of Fish is like just those, you know, the buzzwords, stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, like I've seen Trey bust out the hose for sure.
Yep. Yep.
You know,
you've got the vernacular down. You're hooked.
Yeah. That's it.
Well, thanks so much for doing heavy things for us, for taking the time to talk with me today.
I appreciate it. I'm so thrilled to be on the record, you know.
Definitely. We're thrilled to have you, and good luck with everything in the future. Good luck with the baby.
Thanks, Andy.
That brings an end to this episode of the Jam Bass Podcast Clusterflies series. Many thanks to Sadler for chatting with us and for participating in the Clusterflies project. Be sure to visit Jam Bass to hear Sadler Vaden's cover of Fish's Heavy Things, and visit www.clusterflies.com to purchase your copy of Clusterflies today.